QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned and operated and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of the net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Excellent, hearing none. Are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q.
KJ6KDL.
KJ6KDL, Jim, go ahead.
For those up here in Big Bear who are interested, I thought I'd let everybody know that the Big Bear Computer Club has moved their meetings from Tuesdays to Thursdays at the Discovery Center, I believe. Somebody can correct me. I got to check with the wife who's in a meeting. But if anybody up here wants to go to a Computer Club meeting, it's Thursdays at 7 o'clock at the Discovery Center, second Thursday of the month. Thank you.
Okay, Jim, appreciate that. Great. Now you guys won't conflict with our Tech Tuesday. Are there any other announcements or bulletins for the net? Alrighty, I got a couple here. A week from today at Teddy Bear's in the village, if you're up this way, Big Bear Amateur Radio Club has their little Tuesday breakfast there at Teddy Bear's. So it's usually at 8:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning. If you get there earlier, you'll get a better seat, but that's next Tuesday. And also we have the ham testing, which is scheduled at the Big Bear Lake Fire Department the last Sunday of this month. It's coming up, so get ready if you're going to upgrade, or, you know, get your buddy if he's ready to take that tech test. Want to get out there, so. Alrighty, topics for the evening. We're going to delve into some of the advanced stuff with Yagis. We're going to try to put it in a simple form to make it understandable. Probably going to need to have some really neat stuff tonight, so. Let me break. All right, I'll call the roster we have here, as we're always modifying this, too. So I want to give NQ7RD Rick early check-in there in Corona. Had a couple issues with his radio interfering with his wife's computer. So we're going to check him in. Next on the list here, I got WB6CLZ Mike.
WB6CLZ, we are here and standing by. Good evening, Tom. Good evening to everybody on the net.
All right, Mike, glad to hear you out there. And for ID, this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, with the Tech Tuesday net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. How about WB6CIN Cindy?
I'm here. It's WB6CIN Cindy, here and listening.
All right, Cindy. Glad to hear you out there. I have KA6CIA George. Are you out there listening in this evening?
Sure, I'm listening. Hey, good evening, KA6CIA.
All right, George. Always glad to have you with us, and hopefully all those wins are a history item right now. So, KE6RJ, Harry and Sugarloaf, are you out there? Man, nothing heard. I would imagine KE6QI also is probably forgotten. Nancy, you out there? And nothing heard. And we'll give KJ6FEX Alan in Corona. I haven't heard him for a while. Are you out there, Alan? Nothing heard. How about AF6ZJ, Guy in Rosemont? Guy, you out there this evening? Nothing heard. I think he's out there working on his garden. KI6SKN, Chris, Big Bear City. And nothing heard. KJ68CS, Mike in Fonskin. Mike, you out there?
This is KJ6ACS. Good evening, Nat. Yeah, I'm glad you're back, Tom. All right, KJ6ACS. Can't wait to hear the topic.
All right, Mike. Glad to have you out there. And got another mic here, KJ6FIL. Mike in Redlands, are you out there?
Yeah, good evening, Tom and the group. Glad you can make it back up the hill in time. KJ6FIL.
Roger that. Glad to be up here. Almost done with the move. And boy, what a task. Anyway, we have KF6BH Bob. Are you out there? And nothing heard. I know you're out there, Jim. KJ6KDL Jim.
KJ6KDL Jim here.
Alrighty, well, we'll check in Rosemary, too. If she's in a meeting, we know she's out there. She'll be out there. Real quick, if he's out there in Echolink, W6MRK Mark in Antigua. Are you on Echolink? Real quick. And nothing heard there. How about KJ6DBQ Peggy, Big Bear City? And nothing heard. W6GZI Frank. And nothing heard. KI6IQA Kelly. And nothing heard. How about K6GVL Ron in Green Valley? And they're probably enjoying this beautiful sunset we're having. How about AD6PL, Harold?
AD6PL.
All right, Harold, glad to have you out there from Riverside, I believe. We'll give this guy a try. Ray, KJ6RAY, Ray. And nothing heard. How about W6AWL, Art? Are you out there listening in?
Hey, Tom, I'm giving it a shot. Am I pointing this Yagi in the right direction? W6AWL.
Art, you sound like you're right down the street. That's where you were. But that's you got that pointed perfect. Mark that down. Now, I know Judith might be off the hill with Ken, but let's give her a shot. W6JLM Judith. Okay, Roger. That don't nothing heard. And W6KMM Ken is probably with her. Kenny out there? And nothing heard. How about KI6OHN John? He out there? And nothing heard. Let's see. We'll skip down here to about KI6MAM Bill in Landers. And nothing heard. W6KVC Gary. And nothing heard. KD6LAN Bill from Boulder Bay.
Oh, good evening from Boulder Bay, Billy. Hey, I like the new preamble. Sounds good. Keep it up, KD6LAN.
Yeah, I had a couple of ads there that Mike made, and I think it's great. It's pretty nice. So, alrighty, let's see. We got a K6HAL Rudy. been heard. Raybo might be out there, or he's getting ready for his big trip. W6PBZ, Ray. Nothing heard. Let's give Adam a shot. It's from Garden Grove there, KJ6BCK. Adam, are you listening in this evening?
KJ6BCK, I guess here. Just, sort of, I guess, as my Uncle Tom would say, maliciously listening.
All right, Adam, glad to hear you out there. Yeah, we call your name whether you're listening or not. Anyway, glad to have you with us. All righty, KE6VHM, Frank. And nothing heard. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
All right, Rod. Hey, by the way, I got your email. We'll do a little quick feature on you. That's pretty cool stuff there. How about KJ6DBS, Leon? And nothing heard. How about KB6LTY, Christy? And nothing heard. Is there anybody out there as a late check-in or any other visitors who would like to check in? Please come back to KF6Q.
KI6SKN.
Hey, Chris, glad to have you out there. Anybody else?
Kilo 6, Mike, Indy Victor Mobile.
Kilo 6. Mike, India, Victor, Mobile, if I got that right. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. Name is Art, Alpha Romeo Tango.
All right, Art, glad to have you with us. Mike, if you're out there, CLZ, please copy that down and get these extras in there. Anybody else out there would like to check in? All righty, from Grand Terrace there. One more time with the call sign.
Alpha Echo 6, Tango Victor. Name is Hans.
Oh, okay, Hans. You know what? I've got you in here. Just didn't hear you a couple times there, so sorry I passed over you. Glad to have you with us from Grand Terrace. Anybody else?
Kilo 6, Delta Oscar Echo, Sherry and Rialto.
Okay, in Rialto, just one more time with the call sign so my partner there, Mike, can copy these down. We'll get you on the list here.
Kilo 6, Delta Oscar Echo, K6DOE.
I appreciate that. Listening in from Rialto. Anybody else, please come back.
I6CPO.
Okay, was that N6CPO?
Kilo India 6, Charlie Papa Oscar, Jason and Yukaipa.
Jason and Yukaipa, glad to have you out there. Anybody else, please come back. Arnie, well, I think we got a pretty full house tonight. Glad everybody could be out there listening in. Mike, before we get started on our topic here, what's happening out there in DX? And anybody out there who doesn't know what DX is, DX is long-distance listening and transmitting. If you're a general class or up, it's something you're probably used to, but if you're a tech class and new, that's what it's all about. So, Mike, what's out there in the whole world of listening?
Well, bad timing for me, Tom. First of the month is always awful. I haven't had much time to do any hamming. So there's really nothing I have to report as far as DX. I don't think I've even made a QSO this week. So I'm a bad boy. Space Weather, though, is reporting a solar wind of about 569 kilometers a second right now, and that's supporting some aurora activity, you know, up the poles. you know, that'll help VHF people that are up in the northern latitudes that like to use the aurora to bounce their signals off and do some aurora scatter. And they're also reporting a sunspot of about 83. That's been bumping up and down for the last couple of weeks now, but it looks like it's heading in an upward trend. So that's a good thing. Anyway, I don't know. Let's kick it around and see if anybody else has some DX. That's, I don't have any to throw out there this week. Back to you, Tom, KF6Q, WB6CLZ.
Okay, Mike. Well, no, it's, if you're busy, you're busy. And you know what? It's amateur radio is a great hobby. But we have to have our other priorities sometimes. Is there anybody else out there making any great contacts on the DX circuit there? Please come back.
86PL.
86PL. Harold, go ahead.
Okay, it wasn't me did this. I want that clear first. At the air show last Saturday here in Riverside Airport, our club set up a demonstration booth with an HF rig and a little wire dipole, and it's the deal that QST had about 10 years ago where you cut the sections of speaker wire, zip it open, and you make multi-bands with jumpers across insulators. And they had the wire up from 7 to 13 foot off the ground. They made 40 contacts on the CQ Worldwide TFX single sideband contest. Worked all the United States, call districts, most of the Canadian provinces, across the Pacific, into England, France, Yugoslavia, Ireland, into the North Atlantic, and down into the Orient. So that's what you can do with a little piece of wire that's just barely off the ground whenever things are right. 86PL.
Oh, Harold, that's fantastic, and unfortunately this year I wasn't able to make, I've always made every air show out there, and of course since it's a reserve base, they've been every other year. Had a move going in progress, and unfortunately missed this one. Saw some of the planes come over the Norco area, but that's great, that's fantastic. Real quick, Harold, there, which bands were those in? Were they in the 80, 40, 20, or just scattered everywhere?
Okay, this is at the Riverside Airport. March, I don't think, is having one this year. If they are, it'll be later. It was on 15. They tried 20. There was a food vendor had a generator going that just wiped 20 out. The old man made his, what it is, you take your sections and you put spacers between them about an inch and a half long. And then you fix a jumper wire to go across when you want to cook, you know, hook in that particular band. And this old man made his out to 40 meters. And 40 wasn't working apparently, but he said that 15 was really hot. And I guess that they were drawing huge crowds and handing out fists full of flyers. So they were really impressing everybody over there. And they were having a grand old time with 40 contacts spread out everywhere. Then the same old man built the antenna another day last week, worked 90 stations in one day. So it's, and I had an old man that has a short wave, and he come by me and he says, hey, he said, have you been listening? And I said, I don't have anything to listen to. He said, man, he said, Skip is coming from everywhere. He named places all over the world. He's listening on 10 meters. So everybody better get your wire and get out there, 86PL.
Well, that's fantastic, Harold. Glad to hear that. Glad to see all the enthusiasm out there at the air show. Okay, the Riverside Airport air show. Been there also. That's a good one. Generally, I think it's just one day. Fantastic. Well, is there anybody else out there with any great DX activity? Please come back.
Yes, KN.
And there he is, the voice of Maltby, and also the the great antenna guru there of some sorts with the, what is it, the Burger King Whopper. Go ahead, Chris.
I haven't been real active too much lately. Now, one reason why I checked in a little bit late, there's a guy in Aruba, 20 meter, and I didn't end up making contact with him, but the pileup was pretty big there. But I haven't been too active, except for not quite a week ago. A lot of contacts. Bands 20-meter, 17-meter, 12-meter were all open. An example of a few, and it was all over the board. Russia, New Zealand, Lithuania, Cuba, Canary Islands. Let me change page here real quick. Let's see what else I got here. Oh, gosh. I don't know, a few others here and there. But, yeah, the bands were opening up real good. That was not quite a week ago. KI6SKN.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you know what? And I think as we see, we get closer and closer to the peak of the sunspot cycle, which I do believe the peak is next year. I'm not sure. Stand corrected if I'm wrong. But, yeah, it's going to get fantastic. So this is the time. If you got a tech license, you want to get out there and work some of these guys, get out there and upgrade a general and go for it. You can still work some of the 10-meter anyway with a tech license. So opens up a wide world of DX out there for you. Anybody else out there with some DX going on, please come back. Alrighty. Anybody out there can always jump in any time. A little quick thing here on the do-it-yourself stuff is we always promote that. Why? Two reasons. First off, it's not that hard to do. Number two, you can save yourself a whole lot of money. I think Harold just gave a good example of an antenna thrown together with some speaker wire, jumpers out there to simply work all the bands. It's a great thing. I think Chris is also running a homemade antenna. Good stuff there. Let me reset real quick. And this is KF6Q, Tom Fry, on the Tech Tuesday Net, Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. One of our listeners out there, KA6ROD, Rod, very crafty guy, emailed me, had a couple of questions, and tried to help him out with anything I could. Grabbed an old Slinky. Do you remember that toy? My gosh, I'm not even sure if I had one, but I think I did. Well, he still has an old Slinky, and he's making a homemade antenna tuner. And for anybody out there who does not know, an antenna tuner simply matches your radio up to the antenna, makes a nice clean match there, and helps you do all those DXs out there. And you can do a homemade one with a little craftiness. He's got a Slinky. He's got it separated with some wood dowels. And he's just going to put a capacitor across that thing, and voila. There we go. Rod, if you're still out there, any comments? It looked like the pictures were showing some good progress there.
No comments. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm going to work on it. And when I get it, if I ever get it finished, I'll post some pictures somewhere where people can see it. But it's going to be much cheaper to do it this way than buying one.
Oh, roger that. And if you don't have an old Slinky, of course, you can always take some number 12 wire, copper wire, and wind a coil, but this is pretty cool. Saw those pictures. That's great. So anyway, good do-it-yourself stuff. Tonight's topic, we're going to just talk a little bit more about Yagis. And Mike, I threw a question out at you, and I know this is going to be, tonight's going to be a little complex. Did you ever find anything since I talked to you on the phone about why does a Yagi receive and with gain in that one direction? What makes that really happen other than just the magic? Did you find anything, Mike, or you want me to spill the beans here?
Oh, I think I'm going to have you spill the beans, Tom. I plugged that in every way that I knew, and the best I came up with a page full of formulas. So, you know, the boat is in your ocean. Go for it, Tom, and I'll sit here, and I will be enlightened. Thanks again, Tom, for what you do.
Well, before I start out here, I want to let everybody know that I searched for probably months to get this information because I always wondered, well, you know, we always talk about building J J-poles or antennas, and every piece of wire or chunk of metal that's out there has some specific perfect frequency that it likes. And then we look at this Yagi, and here's a whole bunch of pieces of metal, and they're all different lengths, none of them the same. And, you know, one's tuned to the frequency, but we add more pieces in the front, which are smaller. Well, they should be tuned to a higher frequency, but they're not. And all of a sudden, we get gain on that frequency. So it's kind of contradictory. It just doesn't make sense. But we're gonna make sense of it right now. Let me reset. Just so you know, this guy is a pretty sharp guy. Japanese guy way back, I believe, in the 1930s. Could be corrected on that if I'm wrong. Anyway, your driven element, the main one that you're going to be feeding power to one way or another, that is usually tuned to the frequency of desire. It'll work outside of that, but that's the main one. It's called the driven element. And, Mike, if we had just one element behind it and it's bigger, than that one, we got a two-element Yagi. Is that correct?
Correct, and I'll spill the beans. I think that would be a reflector, wouldn't it?
Exactly, but kind of weird how that works because it's bigger. Should be tuned for a lower frequency, but anyway, it acts basically as a shield, and it's usually grounded, so we'll just let it go at that. But now we start adding more elements in the front, and of course they have to be, you know, they work at a specific distance from that, and it can be, actually, that's variable. There is no perfect thing. There's like a combination of this and that, depending if you want more directionality or if you want more rejection to the rear, the impedance that you want. There's a whole lot of stuff there. So the math on that definitely gets very big. But just taking a basic Yagi with elements we're stacking out front. Now, Mike, I think we've talked about this over the last few weeks, part of them on nets that you've hosted. The more elements we get out front, we start adding gain. Of course, it's a little bit at a time. And, of course, there's a point where the cost of adding them doesn't add enough gain to make it worthwhile. Point of no return, no idle. Diminishing returns. Sorry, Mick, if you're out there. Does that sound about right, Mike?
Area where it's just not worth it for you to go ahead and make it any bigger or any more elements. Yep, that's the diminishing returns we always talk about.
Okay, well, let's get back to the point that these pieces keep getting smaller in length. Instead of the same length. Well, what would happen? Okay, let's get back to our basic common sense of antennas. What if we took and made all the pieces the same length? And Mike, I'm going to throw it out there. What would happen? Just as a common sense thought. Here we got a 2-meter dipole. Instead of making a Yagi out of it, we have the back one, which is normally the reflector. We make it the same length. We pick the front ones, maybe make them all the same length. What's going to happen? Well, just take a guess.
What I'm going to have to do. Yeah, I think that it would work. It probably would not work in an optimum way. It would not be optimized, but I think it would work, and I think you probably would get some gain out of it.
Well, essentially, you can get quite a bit of gain because now you've got dipoles, and you've got multiple dipoles, and provided they're fed in phase, and just assuming that's done properly, and they're all tuned for the same frequency. Now, broadside to this array, you're going to get incredible gain. You're going to add the gain of these elements, and in line, they're actually not going to have. They're going to have a weird pattern because they're going to interfere with each other a little bit off the ends where they're in line. But actually, to the broadside, both front and back, going to have some great gain. So what we have is a pretty good antenna, multiple elements. Actually, it's a collinear array. It's just not a coaxial collinear array because they're actually lined up broadside. And this is not uncommon. It's also done with HF, with huge amounts of space, of course. So what we don't get is directionality. Let me reset. So now, here comes Mr. Yagi, and he does the math on this. Now, there is some math behind this. Not super complex, but a little bit above Math 101. And he changes the size of these elements. So now we no longer have this collinear array. Now, we do still have elements that will be resonant at different frequencies. In fact, they're all going to be resonant at different frequencies. Are you confused yet, Mike?
Am I, as usual. Keep going.
Well, as far as a broadside array, yes. It no longer is going to function. You might end up getting a little bit of a gain. Actually, this is more than likely what you're going to get that you really don't want if you want directionality. So this exists. It's there. These facts haven't gone away. And now we're going to turn to a little bit of a physical analysis here, which is fairly close. It's a good physical analysis, not exactly electrical analysis. We're going to use the waves in the ocean because they really do tell us a lot about the same way our radio waves travel, you know, out through space. Reset. Now, this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, with Tech Tuesday. Just want to make sure I'm still on frequency. I was pushing buttons on my mic again. Bad mic. Anyway, microphone, that is. Anyway, so with the ocean and waves, if you've ever been out in the ocean or even if you haven't, across the ocean, typically there's swells and there's peaks and troughs. Basically, this happens all the time. In storms, of course, they get more intense, but this is a normal thing. And these are, as they approach you, let's say if you're stationary out there, you know, you're going to rise up on the peaks and you're going to go down in the valleys of these troughs and peaks. And this is essentially how the radio waves are approaching your antenna. The peaks would be the high energy points, and the troughs would be the weak energy points, which is from the AC signal and actually the phasing. Confused yet, Mike? Or am I on track with that?
Keep going, you're getting there.
Okay, roger that. Now, I'm not picking on you. Anyway, so what a Yagi does is the main element is tuned to that peak, that high energy peak. And if you at that same instant go forward into that wave, just stop time for a second, of course the wave starts to diminish in height. This is why the elements also diminish in length or height. The further you go, the shorter they get. And what happens here is they are now all in phase with that one particular direction coming where they all line up. Now they're in phase at different phase angles, and they add to each other, whereas anything off the side, they don't. And that's pretty much the way electronically, electromagnetically, as they are out of phase, however, being that they lead the signal, they're in front of the driven element, that is what adds to that signal because it's adding the different phase angles. And that's about as good as that's as close as I can come to explaining the why. So I hope that cleared up. Any comments, Mike?
Honestly, as an electrician, you're basically telling me, it sounds like an STR-type DC drive for DC motors in an industrial situation. Basically, we fire them at phase angles, but I know this is a whole different ballgame.
Arnie, actually, that's what's happening. These, we'll call them parasitic elements, but we'll just say this, the front elements, the directors. They are actually, if you want to call it firing, they're firing at the phase angle that is leading, or actually the phase angle has actually come through. the main element, the main power of that has already hit the driven element. And on the tail end, behind it, is the receding sine wave, whatever, of the wave or whatever. And this is why the spacing's critical. This is why the length is critical. But that only happens when they're all in line and the wave is coming at them in line. Therefore, this is why the Yagi has gain and gain in that direction. And obviously, as you add more elements, it has more gain in that direction. Still has many other things happening there. That's the primary signal. The other stuff probably doesn't amount to about 5 or 10% at most. Back to you, Mike. KF6Q.
This is very interesting. I at this time wish that I had gone a little farther in math. But I'm definitely going to see if I can get you to send me a website on that. I'd like to see some of the computer projections and stuff if they have that on there.
And believe it or not, I actually have a PDF file on that. It took a lot of searching. The math is probably beyond most of us. But that doesn't matter. The just who cares? We don't care about the math. We'll have some little calculator calculate it out for us. The main thing is that, and that's why and how it works. Because I really myself thought, you know, this just doesn't make sense. But we know it works. And it took me literally, I'm going to be more honest about it, probably 6 months of searching just to kind of find all this out. So when we get the website up, sorry about the website, folks. Been involved in a move for 2 months. But I will get back on that, and we'll have that on there. So, anyway, well, Mike, let's see if anybody else has any questions about that. Threw a pretty big topic out there. Please come back to KF6Q.
KJ6KDL.
Hey, Jim, KJ6KDL, how you doing? Go ahead.
That was a good explanation. I followed you all the way into that, and I picked up on the phase thing about 3 seconds before you said phase. My one question is the phasing on the length of the elements in line with the actual length of the frequency? Say, for example, on 2 meters, or is there some scaling factor involved in the length of the antenna and the length of the reflectors?
I'm going to just shoot from the hip on this, as I haven't really looked at the math formulas on this for a while. But essentially, if you could picture that sine wave, and as the sine wave is coming through, and the peak of that sine wave has just hit that, you know, driven element, the reflector itself is basically a shield. It functions as a shield, and in the shield in the same direction to get a maximum rejection behind it. But the directors in front, they basically will almost calc out to the waveform, you know, on the sine wave, and obviously not going too far down the ramp to the zero point. But that little bit in front, and distance-wise, they should calc out length and distance to basically map out to that frequency that it's designed for. So. And that's the whole theory. And where the guy ever came up with that, I have no idea, but it's fantastic because it definitely works. Back to you, Jim, real quick.
Okay. I'm excited to see, I don't know, if the math is heavy for you, it'll be definitely heavy for me, but I'd like to see that because I understand the concept. So I'd like to see the application. Thanks, KJ6KDL.
86KDL.
Okay, Jim. Well, glad you're following there. And the math is, like I said, math is math. So I don't think it's super complex, but the basic thing is the concept. Harold, 86PL, go ahead.
The spacing on those elements would have to be as precise as you can calculate, too, wouldn't it, in order for that to work properly? 86PL.
Oh, roger that. And essentially, if you ever look at any of the design little calculator online, there's a million of them out there, online calculators for building your own Yagis. It's They should be precise. And, of course, if you vary off of that, this is why some homemade yagis don't work so well. You got to be careful that you cut the lengths right and, you know, space them right. And if you're off a little bit, it's still going to work. It's just not going to work as well, that's all. So as it gets a little bit out of tune. But, yeah, it's like anything else. There's a margin of error there that can happen and it'll still work. Back to you, Harold, real quick.
Yeah, anybody that can get their hands on Bill Orr's book, with directional antennas, he has charts in there that you can do your own calculating for the, you determine what boom length you want, which will determine your eventual gain, and then you use this little chart to calculate the length of the element and the spacing of the element, and it works out really great. It's kind of small in the book I have because it's a paperback, but you're careful with it, way you can calculate just about anything you want on the Yagi 86BL.
And Tom Fry, KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Yeah, William Orr, or Bill Orr, has got some great stuff. I've got a couple of his older works, PDF form, where the copyrights expired on them, and some stuff out there that you can download for free. Great stuff. That guy's another great guy out there with a lot of stuff. And just as a side note, Yagis, you can have two Yagis for the same band, same frequency. Let's say a 2-meter Yagi. Let's say they're both 5-element Yagis. One's longer than the other. Mike, I'm going to throw this back to you real quick. Let's say I got two 5-element Yagis. One's got a boom length, say, of, oh, I don't know, maybe 7 feet. One's got a boom length of 9 feet. Now, here's the question. Will they both work? And do you know what the difference is? And we lost him. WB6CLZ, you out there?
So sorry, Tom. Yeah, I just got a virus on the computer, so at least it says it is. So I was distracted for a second. I am very sorry, Annette and Tom. Yeah, would you please repeat your question?
Okay, roger that. Not a problem, because actually some of these design calculators online, they're online calculators, and you'll find that you can actually, let's say we have a Yagi, two Yagis we're going to design through this calculator. Now, they're both going to be 5-element. They're both going to be, say, for 2 meters, same frequency, center frequency of 147.330. But now the one has got a boom length of 7 feet. The other one's got a boom length, let's just say, of 9 feet. Now, here's the question. Number one, will they both work? And number two, what difference will that make?
Got it that time. Okay, well, yeah, they both would work, and the 9-foot would have the high, better gain. It would have a narrower bandwidth, better front-to-back ratio and such. So the longer the boom, the higher the gain in a general application. But you do have a point of where it's just not worth it. Diminishing returns, we call it. How's that one?
Okay, keep in mind, they both have 5 elements. Does that change anything you just said?
It's been my understanding that the longer the boom, the better gain on an antenna. But that's as much as I know about that subject.
Well, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there, or the bird with both rocks, or no, same two stones and the same. No, anyway, essentially, what happens? Yes, is that one of those, they'll both work. One will have higher gain, but a narrower bandwidth. It might fall off. Let's say we design it around simplex or a national call frequency, 146.520. Well, maybe down at 145.5, all of a sudden this thing has fallen off, but it's got higher gain at the design frequency. So that is, I believe, like you said, that'll be for the longer boom. Now, but maybe we want this thing to have not so much gain, not worried about that, but we want it to operate on the whole band. So it'll be shorter, and the calcs will be different. But it has a lot to do still. The length of the boom, of course, the elements are not going to, they're going to be different lengths too. There's going to be five on both. Those elements will all be different. They'll still fit in that ocean wave scenario. So different lengths, but that's the difference. So there is no one particular boom length, elements all the same. There's not one perfect Yagi. Depends what you want. Anything else we can change with this stuff, Mike? Back to you.
Let's see. We have bandwidth. We have gain. I would think we would be able to change that. Let's see. I don't know. Give me another parameter, Tom.
Well, the last one there that actually is going to make a little bit of a difference, which we can still modify that, is the impedance of this thing. Of course, in the perfect world, we'd like all of our antennas to be 50 ohms and just match up perfectly to our 50-ohm coax. Unfortunately, that's not true. A dipole itself, basically straight-out dipole, is 72 ohms, not 50. An angled dipole, whether it be a Yagi style or a long wire, drops down to about 50. Actually, they'll drop down lower as you change that angle. Harry and I found this out working at his house last fall. Pretty cool experiment. And so what happens is you can also change some of these things and change the impedance. Almost all the time, it's going to be less than 50, generally around anywhere from 16 ohms all the way up to about 30 ohms, but never 50. Back to you real quick, Mike.
But we do have things to make it be 50, do we not?
Oh, roger that. And this is where we come in with different matching networks or TLTs, different ways of setting up our tuning. We can simply ignore it. It'll still work. All or none of the above. So, and that'll be a topic probably for next week, but we're not going to try to catch it all this week. But so that's another thing there. And actually, the best Yagis work to come out right around, I believe it's about 30 or 32 ohms, if I'm not mistaken. But there's a lot of information on that. And trust me, I have a boatload of that. And the more I look, the more I find. But either way, it's a great antenna. Oh, wait a minute. Got to have that rotator. But that's okay. We can always use the old Armstrong method, right?
Used on 10 meters at field day.
Roger that. Well, anyway, that's a whole lot of information for one evening. Is there anybody out there? Any questions? Because trust me, it's a whole lot in one night. Any questions or comments or anything, please come back. KF6Q.
SKM.
Hey, Chris, go ahead. SKN.
Off, I'd like to say, great topic tonight. Very interesting. Very good. My question is, now, if you make your Yagi antenna, say you make two of them identical, but one of them, the diameter of the tubing for the reflector and, you know, all those little things, if you make the diameter a little bit smaller or larger, how does that affect the antenna?
Chris, I'm glad you brought that up. That's the one part I forgot to mention, and that is important. Essentially, the diameter of the driven element is the one that's the most, influential, or something like that. Anyway, the reflector and the directors, they can pretty much be made out of eighth-inch wire or thereabouts. It's a matter of strength there. But back to, like we discussed with J-poles, difference between half-inch pipe, three-quarter pipe, one-inch pipe, or tubing on a Yagi, same way. your bandwidth, of course, that also will change and widen with a bigger diameter. So, good point. I had forgotten all about that. Back to you, Chris.
All right. Well, I believe it was back when I took my general class license and whatnot. That was in the test, and or I picked it up somewhere, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. So basically, if you run a larger diameter, mainly the director, then that gives you a wider bandwidth. That's great to know. All right. Thank you, Tom. KI6SKN.
And Tom Fry, KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday Group on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. I have a Yagi with 1/8 wire. I don't recommend that. I mean, that's a manufacturer's thing, and of course they're going to save money by that. You get something that's really, it wants to bend every time it just even sees anything. But the tubing's better. But yeah, I would say 3/8 to half. And if you've seen any of those 40-meter beams, Augies, excuse me, 20-meter arrays up there, the driven element's pretty good size. And the others aren't too shabby either because they have to be strong just to be sticking out there that far. So, but that's the big thing. And actually, they shorten it a little bit. It's a little math formula. If it gets a little bigger in diameter, it shortens up mathematically a little bit. But other than that, very good point. All right. Anybody else out there, any comments, suggestions, or questions, please come back to KF6Q.
86BL.
86BL. Howard. Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, my understanding is that as a wave comes in, it hits each one of the elements, that a small portion of it reflects back toward the nose of the antenna, back in the direction it came from. It's picked up by the next incoming wave, and how does that, how much proportion, I would say, would that have on your gain? Would it be anything? That's the reason that I brought up the point of the exact spacing. So I read this in one of the books, and what would you say that would do to your gain? As long as you have everything exactly spaced the way it's supposed to be and that bounce is being picked up by the next wave that comes in at the proper time.
I think if it reflects back, and I don't know if it would actually bounce back, I mean, two radio waves bouncing off each other. However, it may bounce off the next director in front of it and then add. I know that would definitely happen, and this could also add to the gain. If there was any reverse effect there, it's probably why we don't get an exact double by adding double the elements. You know, we get close, but there's always that, no matter how perfect it's made, we end up with it not being double. I mean, it's just because of that fact. There's those other little things that get in there. There's a lot to it. But Harold, that's very, I'm glad to see that there's somebody else out there who's been looking into this, because it's really, it's interesting. As far as if you're going to build one and make it work, if you follow the directions, cut proper, and do all the things, the right things, it doesn't matter what's really going on, just as long as it works. But it's good to know why it works. I think that's a great thing. So, good information there, Harold. I'm not sure about the reflection thing, but that's probably what happens. Back to you real quick.
Right. I just have one more comment. I found this out the hard way. Well, it didn't cost me, because I always double-check everything. And in ARRL's handbook, they have a little five-element log periodic. Supposedly has 5.2 gain. And I just started to build that. And my suggestion is that no matter where you get the information, you sit down with your calculator, get a good calculator, sit down with it. And even if you don't know math, with a good calculator, you can do it and do their math. Because you could end up wasting a whole lot of expensive aluminum and a whole lot of time, whether it's expensive or worthless, it's still time. Because, like
back in the ARRL handbook, nobody did the math and nobody measured it. And they said it was a 12-foot boom. And when you calculate it out, it comes out to 13 inches. So you have your last element is going to be hanging in outer space there if you cut it the way they tell you. So I would suggest that you get your calculator out and you check everybody's math before you start whacking on expensive stuff. 86 feet.
That's a very good point there. What do they say, measure twice, cut once? Well, I think in this case, calculate as many times as you like and get all the information. And like I said, some of that aluminum, you know, there's places to kind of shop around and maybe get a good buy. But either way, it's going to cost some money, so you want to make sure you only do it once. At least you don't have mistakes. Oh, you always have the upside of that, Harold, is you have elements for a higher frequency antenna, you know, if you need it. But, you know, and that's another good thing, if we have time, which I think we do, a log periodic. Now, here's another antenna. All the elements are active. And the difference between that and the Yagi. Mike, I'm going to throw it back in your ballpark real quick. It's kind of like a Yagi, but now they're not fast in the same way. We have a feed line, transmission line, and cross-phasing coming in there. So now all of a sudden, instead of a Yagi with smaller elements, we have a multi-band dipole. Interesting. Back to you, Mike.
Very interesting. My favorite log periodic in the whole world is on the 55 freeway by the fairgrounds. There's a National Guard armory there that has a 330 megahertz log periodic, which is really awesome. Yeah, a little bit different shape, a lot of different element spacing on those. Very broad-banded antenna. Back to you, Tom.
And I think the main point I'm stressing here is that here again we have the shorter elements in front, but they're no longer directors. They're not shorted to the boom. Now they're attached to the feed line, and the feed line quite often is crossed over to get that phasing. So it's a little bit different, but same, not exactly the same, like you said, different, a little bit different spacing. So a lot of things you can do with the metal out there, but maybe we'll get into the log periodics on another night too. So. A lot of experimenting there. A lot of good stuff there. Gains less, but the bandwidth is extremely wide. So, great deal there. So, anyway, anybody else out there? Any comments or suggestions or questions? Please come back.
APO.
Yeah, Roger that. APO, go ahead.
I was just curious. How about a parabolic reflector? Back when I first got my ticket and we started tea hunting, I was curious about making a cross between a parabolic and a Yagi. Has anyone have any thoughts on that?
Well, for your reflector on a Yagi, instead of a single element, I mean, there you can have double elements in the reflector. You can actually have a flat piece of metal back there, or you can have parabolic. Have that aimed at your director, and I'm sure there would be a lot of different combinations there. So there's a lot of open area out there still in antennas. It's like anything else. What was it around the turn of the century, and I mean the last big one, the 1900s, they were going to close the patent office. Everything had been invented. And the same with antennas out there. There is always new stuff and new frontiers, so there's some good area out there for trying new stuff. Back to you.
Alrighty, well, yeah, I just thought I'd throw that one out there. So, anyway, all right, well, I'll give it back to Net Control. This is KI6CPO.
Yeah, KI6. CPO was KF6Q here, Net Control, Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff. Corner reflectors, there's a neat one. a lot of these are definitely bring up the rejection to the rear. That's a fact. However, like corner reflector, parabolic, all these have higher wind resistance, cost more money, so there's always those trade-offs. So, and this is why you don't see a lot of corner reflectors on the back of a Yagi. They catch wind really well. So, anyway, anybody else out there, any questions, comments, or suggestions, please come back to KF6Q.
E6PL.
E6PL, Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll give you, you're familiar with it, I'm sure. As a matter of fact, you probably know the people that own it. But for all the people that are in the area up on the hill, down here on the flatland, anytime you have a chance, drive down Van Buren, north of Pedley, which is north of the Santa Ana River, around 61st or 63rd Street, you look west, and you see a tremendous antenna farm out there with a bunch of towers and a whole lot of money up in the air. And so, yes, did have at least, I think it was a 40-meter fixed dipole up there on top of the tower. And my understanding is if you go over there and you tell them your call sign and tell them you saw their antennas, you're interested in what they have, why they'll give you a little tour and point out what they have and tell you all about it. Hey, D6PL.
You know, Harold, I have seen that, and that is awesome. I mean, that is an antenna farm to the max. Yeah, just west of Van Buren there. And I think there's another gentleman down there in Mira Loma, which is now Jurupa Valley. He's mentioned that to me some time back. And he said, is that your house? I go, no, I wish it was. So, yeah, that's an incredible array. I meant to get a couple of pictures of that. I have not. So need to actually I'll be back down there again probably in a few days. So to get a picture of that. Incredible. So that's good to know. Anyway, anybody else out there, any comments, questions, or suggestions, please come back. Well, Mike, have anything to add here as we're getting ready to close the net? I'll hand it back to you real quick. WB6CLZ KF6Q.
Golly, Tom, great net tonight. I have personally learned a lot, and hopefully everybody else has been enlightened somewhat to more information on Yagi antennas. Thanks again. I really appreciate what you do. KF6Q, WB6CLZ.
Oh, roger that. Yeah, there's, I think antennas are fascinating, and I know we do a lot on antennas. It's a good thing we can do is a do-it-yourself thing, but try to clear the mystery and all the stuff around us. I'm not going to say it's rocket science. It's not rocket science, but it's antenna science. And sometimes it's really not as complex. We kind of pass it off. Well, it works. I don't know why, but it just works. So, and we're trying to expand on that and help everybody out there. So, alrighty, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. And we are closing the net. Let's see, what time is it? 2000 hours and 3 minutes. So I do appreciate everybody out there listening in and making comments and participating. And we hope to carry this on every week, keep it interesting and educational. Make sure we have a lot of fun at the same time. So one more time, thanks again for everybody. And hopefully you'll join us again next week, 1900 hours, Tuesday, on Tech Tuesday. This is KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. And we'll be clear. Standing by.